Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 10th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing today, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. So, D.R., there's an interesting book that I read a few years ago called Guns, Germs, and Steel by a man named Jared Diamond. Guns, Germs, and Steel. And the book is essentially an attempt to explain why human civilization is the way it is, which is kind of a big topic to try and discuss. But he starts out the book with the following kind of question, which I have found fascinating for a long time. He said, consider the Spanish conquistadors marching into Mexico and the Aztec civilization collapses, right? And of course, the big historical question is, why did that happen? And everyone says, oh, it's because the conquistadors had guns and horses and stuff. But he asks a much bigger question, Jared Diamond does. He says, okay, why did the Spanish have the horses and the guns? Why didn't it turn out that Montezuma sailed the other way across the Atlantic and marched into the court of the King of Spain? Right? Mm-hmm. Why did that happen? And the book then goes on to discuss a lot of what you might call distal causes, or things that are way back in the background that eventually contributed to a very important foreground event like the conquest of the Aztecs. Mm-hmm. Another guy who you and I have spoken about a lot is named Dave Roberts over at Vox. Mm-hmm. And beginning of the year, he put up a interesting discussion about whether or not droughts in the western part of the U.S. were, the fires in the western part of the U.S. were, quote-unquote, caused by climate change. And, of course, they're not directly caused by climate change, but climate change is a distal, D-I-S-T-A-L, a distal cause of these things. It provides the underpinning. So there are situations in which there are immediate foreground events that are undeniable and probably have a pretty clear specific cause. I mean, somebody smoked a cigarette and threw it into a dry forest, right? Question is, why was the forest so dry is a bigger question, and one that's one step removed from the immediate cause. So, DR, I guess having said all that as kind of a preface, you tell me, what was the biggest climate news story of the past week, month, and probably will be for a long time coming?
Well, probably the refugee crisis that's taking place for people escaping the civil war in Syria, which was exacerbated by the years-long drought that began in Syria in, I believe, 2006. This was discussed famously in the documentary Years of Living Dangerously, in a drought that was exacerbated by human-caused climate change, precipitating a civil war from which so many Syrians are trying to flee and trying to escape to other countries, some of them welcoming them with open arms, some of them being quite hostile to these refugees. And it's basically the first sign of what is inevitably going to come as the planet gets hotter and more parts of the world become inhabitable. People will have to flee and move to new terrain because the old terrain from which they come is basically barren and basically, you know, cannot feed and cannot house, their citizens.
So, I mean, I guess, so the point here is that the, I guess I'd call it the Syrian-European refugee crisis, at some fundamental level, climate change was a significant contributor to, right? Climate change didn't make Assad, right? That's his name, something Assad. You know, climate change doesn't make him drop barrel bombs on cities, right? And climate change doesn't make ISIS destroy the ancient ruins at Palmyra. But the underpinnings of why those guys have power or why there's a conflict has to do with climate change, right? It's one of many, but it's a contributing effect, right?
Exactly. There was a great piece by Aaron Baker for the Time Magazine website on, I believe, September the 10th, in which he noted, quote, from 2006 to 2011, large swaths of Syria suffered an extreme drought that, according to climatologists, was exacerbated by climate change. That drought led to increased poverty and relocation to urban areas, and that drought, in addition to its mismanagement by the Assad regime, contributed to the displacement of 2 million in Syria. And that internal displacement may have contributed to the social unrest that precipitated the civil war, which generated the refugee flows into Europe. So in other words, human-caused climate change basically causing not just one disaster, but a series of disasters, a series of conflicts that have worldwide implications. So when people dismiss the reality of climate change having a national security impact, they absolutely do not know what they're talking about.
Well, I think that, I mean, in that, for me, is the important point, is that when presidential candidate Mr. O'Malley says that climate change and ISIS are tied to each other, it is a chain of reasoning that points out that climate issues have contributed to what's already a bad situation, right? It doesn't help. And so I think that in this current European crisis, it's important for climate hawks to kind of look past the immediate causes to these deeper things. And the real reason to do that is because I think what we're looking at is a foretaste of what's to come. I mean, these people, so there's people coming out of Syria, and actually something I read said that many people in the face of weather disasters try to stay put in their homes. But if you put a weather disaster, a drought or a flood on top of a politically charged, you know, authoritarian government, you have these large outflows of people. And this, something similar, I think, is happening in a place called the Sahel, which I think is a band of fertile ground just south of the Sahara Desert. And that place has been rife with conflict for many years. As it gets desertified, those people are making their way into Europe along with the Syrians. And that's a much more clear-cut case where, you know, the green land is disappearing. The political atmosphere is not good, so people get out of Dodge. And I mean, one of the things that I read said that nobody leaves their home country because the CO2 emissions are too high, right? Everyone leaves because of these other pressing issues, but the underlying set of circumstances has been in some way helped by climate change.
Exactly. And there are so many interlocking geopolitical implications. There was a great piece in the September 10th, New York Times, in which Secretary of State John Kerry discussed, the issue of whether America will bring Syrian refugees in. There was also a great story in USA Today about this. And there was another interlocking piece with Joe Rome of Climate Progress on September the 8th, basically saying that, you know, the United States, as for so many decades the world's greatest polluter, has a moral obligation to bring in Syrian refugees and others who have been victimized or displaced by the climate crisis. And this ties into another controversy from earlier this year that I did a piece about that I was a bit nervous about since it had a potential controversial implications. There was a commentary by a progressive radio host named David Pakman, who talked about how for people who constantly complain about the alleged scourge of so-called illegal immigration, they should be the first ones out of the gate calling for action on carbon pollution in an attempt to prevent the displacement of those from other countries into the United States. And from that perspective, you would figure that the people pounding the drum about illegal immigration should say that in the name of preventing displacement and in the name of preventing refugees from coming to places
In the
where they're
first
presumably
place.
not wanted, we should presume we try to reduce worldwide carbon pollution in order to prevent such displacement. As I said, I was very skittish about writing that because of the obvious, moral implications of suggesting that xenophobia should be something that should be cited as a reason for action on climate change. But when in this geopolitical context, in a discussion in a political discussion we're having about both a refugee crisis and demagoguery of illegal immigration, you would figure again that the people who get all worked up about illegal immigration should say the best way to reduce migration, legal or illegal, into countries, and the best way to reduce the alleged problems of people from different cultures coming into a country should be to make those countries habitable by reducing carbon pollution.
Right. And so I think the first point that is of interest to me is that we consider at Climate Hearts consider these people moving into Europe as climate refugees, right? And recognize the fact that climate refugees exist today, that is happening now. It's already going on. It's not a theoretical IPCC bullet point in some white paper someplace. These people really are in the front lines. I think a second important point to note is that the situation is not going to get better anytime soon unless, well, even if we take action, it's going to get better. It's going to get worse for a while, but the prospects are not good. That's why the U.S. Army is talking about climate change as a threat multiplier, because these sort of as I was saying, as I've said many times, I mean, the countries of India and Pakistan both get drinking water from the glaciers that melt in the Himalayas. And when all those glaciers melt, they are still not going to like each other for pre-existing reasons. And they both have nuclear weapons, and everyone's getting thirsty. That's a very bad situation that you can imagine happening. And I would submit that even here in the United States, we shouldn't feel too smug, because we have the western half of the country essentially dried out with no water, likely to have that continuing over the next century. And we look north to Canada, where they have a significant fraction of the world's fresh water. And all of a sudden we say, hey, what are you doing sitting on our water, Mr. Canadian? Again, that's not a happy prospect for anyone. So I think that refugees exist, climate refugees exist. It's going to get worse, and one of the big questions is, what the heck do we do about it? So
Exactly.
what can you do about it?
And it's a good question. Will we show compassion? Because when you think about a similar refugee crisis of sorts, the immigration to the United States from the Irish because of the potato famine, and how, when they came to our shores, what did they get? No Irish need apply. Where was the compassion,
My
basically?
grandmother's an Irishman, and when I was a kid, we were always told about signs in the windows for job plate for work, and they say, worker wanted. Underneath it would say, Irish and dogs need not apply. So, exactly to your point.
And will history repeat itself, or will compassion be shown in the face of a severe crisis? This example has been brought up in some social media discussions, but that scene in the movie The Day After Tomorrow, where American citizens displaced by climate change basically immigrate en masse to Mexico. And Mexico has to deal with an illegal immigration crisis of Americans, that sort of thing.
Well, but I mean, funny you should say that, because I was thinking about the same thing, is how ludicrous the end of that movie is, where the Mexican government happily accepts 100 or 200 million Americans to march into Mexico and take the place over. I assume that the end of the movie was tongue in cheek or sarcastic ironic, because the real circumstances would be different. And so the other point that I wanted to make is that in terms of reacting to this Syrian European crisis, it's important to take the specific crisis on its own merits. And I think today the United States said we're going to take 10,000 people out of the, I don't know, millions of people that are on the move, right? So whether or not that's legit. But to address this kind of issue, I think the world needs to do two things. One is to cut the amount of carbon emissions, right? So to mitigate the carbon emissions, but at the same time, there has to be some sort of global effort to address the coming waves of refugees that goes beyond this sort of crisis of the moment that we're seeing with the Syrians. I mean, again, this is going to keep happening. There has to be some sort of reserve planning, money, whatever, somewhere to handle future conditions, which God knows could happen anywhere.
And we think about that now iconic image of the 3-year-old child Alan Kurdi, who's seen you know washed up on a Turkish beach, and think about how many more Alan Kurdis are going to keep happening and happening and happening if we don't do anything.
I tell you, it's a bit of a downer to think about it, but you know, the antidote to despair is action. So that's why we need to face this crisis and recognize that it's real and happening, and we have to do something. Right, DR?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right, well, I think we got to leave it there, DR. Let me tell our listeners that they will be able to find links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.net/blog. For those of you who have been following the WordPress blog, we've moved over to a new blog associated with the MCAN website. So it's massclimateaction.net/blog. You can find us on Facebook. There, it's the same old place. It's /massclimateaction. You can find the show, share the show with your friends so other people can hear us. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher. You can get us on TuneIn Radio. You can get us on iTunes in ways I'm sure you are familiar with. I don't have to tell you how to search. So let us close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.